Yeah.
Yeah, I see it broad as brass. That, wow.
That's one. That's from a couple of weeks ago, to be fair.
Just a quick question. How long does something like that take you to collect? We're talking black books here. How long does that take?
I don't even know, you know, fucking ages. I don't get, I can't spend like all day on a piece because of, you know, family, work, homes, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So I try and do a few hours here and there. But overall, I think I was on that for a couple of weeks.
Jeez.
And doing bits now and again.
Couple of weeks. Wow. What is that? You know what I'm saying?
That's last year, I think that one is.
More.
Killer Keller official.com.
Street Culture TV.
Instagram UK Frontline.
Beatbox created.
Killer Keller.
And we're here to talk about world music and street culture.
Killer Keller Podcast.
Essential as you need to be is another glorious street culture day. And our sponsors, the mighty GK Nifty Heads, have a massive 100,000 play-to-earn NFTs to give away to the streets. Just hit the link in the description or go to gknifty.com and get ready for HODL Wars Summer 2024. Oh my goodness, we are in the presence of absolute greatness from 1984. Long time, this gentleman has been serving us with some of the most upfront, current and beyond graffiti. And oh my goodness, a trailblazer. A pioneer in the game. Kemet is inside the place. What are we saying, my brother?
Hello.
Oh my goodness, it's been a long time coming. Absolute pleasure to have you on the podcast, my brother.
Thank you very much.
My goodness. And haven't we gone through trials and turmoils? But we made it. We got here. We got in the end, didn't we?
We got there in the end, man.
We'll spare them the technological details, which in theory shouldn't really be happening in 2024. How are you? Where are you? And what you're doing?
I'm good. I'm just outside Brum in my attic, in my little den, talking to Mr. Keller.
I'm presuming this is where all the Endeavour concoctions are being created. Am I wrong?
Yeah, no, you're correct. This is where I come and hide out the way and just sit and doodle or do some little black piece books or some little canvases or whatever. So yeah, this is my little hidey hole.
Does the journey of a writer ever really stop creatively?
I had a few years out of it, just completely out of it for a good 10 years. But I still kind of scribbled on stuff and still dropped tags in dust on windows and stuff like that. So, yeah, I suppose it has ebbs and flows, doesn't it? Sometimes you're proper on it and then it eases off a bit. It goes in cycles, I think. It does for me anyway.
What are the key moments that give you that, whoa, I've got to do this, I've got to go, I've got to, you know, because obviously ebbs and flows, that must happen a considerable amount.
I don't know, maybe just seeing some good shit that someone's painted makes you just want to go out and do something, or you'd be, I don't know, you do a bit of a sketch and you something a bit different, so you want to get out there and try it, you know, different things really, just... I think lately, the last few years, the main drive has been Mr. Posier kicking me up the ass and making me get back on it, because I'd kind of trailed off a little bit about 4 or 5 years ago. And then Posier messaged me and we talked about painting, so we eventually went and did a painting, and it just kind of went from there and we got on. And he kind of gave me a new lease of life, I think.
You know what is beautiful about that is that whole cycle of graph, and you know, you were one of the original dons. I mean, big up all the Birmingham crew, but you were UK centric, and the things that you were delivering, and to see it go right round, and then you get the new generation, so to speak, that, you know, have picked up on that essence. I mean, that is it's a romantic idea, right?
Yeah, if you put it like that, yeah, definitely.
never ages, does it?
No, I mean, I'm still I'm still quite hungry for it. Do you know what I mean? I'm still trying to get better. There's no settling. Do you know what I mean? I'm always trying to do something a little bit better or think of something different. I think the last few years I've switched up my style a little bit. And I think the key is to just always push, for me anyway, is to always push yourself and try and do the best that you can.
For sure. I have an affliction for Birmingham so far as their creative rate and the thought that goes into a lot of what goes on around there. And you're certainly one of the hat tippers, you know. You must have seen such a huge change in graph and the mentality, right?
Oh yeah, definitely. Without a doubt. Back in the early days it was quite moody. There was a lot of tension. So it's definitely changed. It's all quite happy and good. Well, the circles I move in, it's all nice and friendly, and do you know what I mean?
Mm.
But back in the day, it wasn't that way. It wasn't that way at all.
Well, this is where we should start. Let's start back in the day. It's like, so where did it begin, brother? Where did the bug hit you? And like, what was the landscape like back then?
It was weird because even as a really young kid, I was just fascinated by just seeing, right, you know, graffiti, which in them days a lot of it was probably done in an emulsion or you know, like a paintbrush, like skinheads and stuff like that.
Mm.
So I kind of started pinching felt tips and just writing any old crap on garages by my house and just crap like that from a really early age before I really knew what graph was.
How early was that? What age range were you at that time?
There was a gang of skinheads that were kind of local to us, and one of them was his name was Longshot, and he did like this real, like just like square letters, and he'd done it in felt tip on this wall, and I was amazed by it, and I used to copy it and that. So I'd have been maybe 12, so it'd be about 82, something like that.
Wow, 82.
Yeah, I was 12 years old, and I just used to write any old crap on the wall, and it weren't until a couple of years later I started seeing some of the actual graffiti in a couple of magazines and stuff. And all the breakdancing come out. So you start seeing little bits, and I was just amazed by it. I was just like, what the fuck is this? I want to do this. And it started there. So at school, I started a little crew with my mates, and we were just tagging and stuff because we couldn't breakdance. And they kind of got bored of it. And I wanted to carry on, and I met a guy at college. And he was doing this outline in his book. So I kind of clocked him doing it. So I started doing one and started, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we got talking. And he took me to all these spots that I never knew existed, where all this graph was. And as soon as I'd seen it, I could see it like in front of me. It just blew my head up. And I was like, I need to do this. And that guy was Cries from Birmingham.
Wow. Okay. Big up Cries. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So he kind of opened the doors fully for me. And after that, I just love it. And I still do.
It's funny you say, yeah, after all these years, right? It's funny because, you know, it kind of correlates with what Pozzy was saying about, you know, mulch was really the go-to medium of just getting those fills right. And, you know, because we're talking of a time where, you know, to get paint, even to do fades and such, it was like a mystic thing. Like when you pull up and look at a piece, it was like, what, how? Like,
yeah, how is the word? And also then they were fucking tiny as well. They were really small pieces compared to what we paint now. Do you know what I mean? They were tiny little things.
And what was the landscape in Birmingham like for its time?
I would say kind of late 86 onwards, it was absolutely battered to fuck. There was stuff everywhere. The buses were crap, were just covered in tags. All the subways in Birmingham, all around, it just exploded. It was just mental.
Because you had the buses as well. You had the buses as well, which were a bit of a phenomenal
We probably did the buses for a good couple of years, and then we moved on to track sides and started doing the track sides.
And that's the thing. You were like one of the first people to do. You were one of the first people to do track sides. You were early adoptee to that, right?
It sounds like you know more about it than me. Yeah, we did. We did do a few.
Very good. Get you out of trouble, shall we say?
We used to hit the track sides quite a bit. We didn't have the trains that we could hit in Birmingham, so it was mainly train lines, walking them down the lines and stuff.
I always bug out about, you know, meeting people that were first generation that saw it for what it was, and I think to a lot of people, I know the closest comparable, I think, particularly for hip hop, was that it was almost like the hooligans. Tizer said this. It's like the hooligans of hip hop, and you know, it was almost like the people that wanted to cause more anarchic, as opposed to like the breakdancers or hip hop heads that would rap and stuff.
Yeah, I guess so. That kind of makes sense. Yeah. With vandals, really.
Yeah.
I mean? Just getting your name out there as much as you could. I used to go out on my own. So I used to just catch a bus into town, into Birmingham, and just walk around with paint pens and spray cans up my sleeve or whatever, and just walk around on my own and just get my tag up. So I think early on, nobody really knew who I was. And then all of a sudden, because these little trips to town on a night, they were like, the fucking hell's this come from? Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of them were solo missions early on.
Really? So it was really just the act of getting up and being present, and no one really knew.
Yeah, definitely.
That is bonkers. And who were the influential people within the Birmingham area, you know, as things started developing? Who was moving and shaking at that time for you?
For me personally, probably UBA, so United Bad Art. So that would have been a Tisky. Chase was probably my all time favourite writer, and I've got one of his original black book sketches here on the wall as well.
Oh really? So, wow.
Yeah. And Zucky as well. He was tagging Mix back in the day early on. And it was weird because we was all kind of arch enemies. And as we've met later on in life, it's like we're brothers now. Do you know what I mean? But back in the day, it wasn't like that.
Let's talk about the arch enemy aspect, because, you know, with age comes wisdom, right? And you guys meeting up later down the line, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I love him to death. He's a great lad. But when we was younger, you know, it wasn't so nice.
So it was a lot. It was more of a darker age of graffiti, where, you know.
Yeah, I'd say so. Definitely, there's been many fights and like getting on buzzies, and there's another crew on there, so you start trying to out tag each other, and the buzz will stop, and all the people are getting off, and you're just trashing the buzz, and then you can hear the sirens come in, so you're all running off and hiding and stuff. But it was wicked. It was naughty, but it was good.
With regards to that. And the lifestyle that perpetuated, did it ever become apparent that this thing had a real movement happening, and you were being chased? It was an energy of, well, because you know you have the internals, which is between you and the rivals, but then there's also this higher authority coming at you from all angles as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point. Because they had a section of, like, I guess they were transport police. We used to call them the Yorkies. And they started following the buses and stuff. And so if they saw you tagging, they'd stop the bus and come on and arrest you. And they'd start taking photographs of all the tags. So if you got arrested, you'd get nicked for all of it rather than just one tag.
Really?
And then, yeah. And they used to follow the buses, and there was a few incidents with them because I don't know if they were actual police or what, but we used to, obviously, when they used to grab hold of us, we'd fight back. Do you know what I mean? I mean, they'd just stand there, we'd try and get away from them or whatever. So it did get quite bad. And then, of course, as it went on, they got to know your faces and stuff as well. But to be fair, I kind of kept a low profile with them. So I kind of kept out of it. I had a couple of run-ins with them. So it wasn't too bad for me. But
enough, right? Once is enough.
Yeah. It was enough, definitely.
Talk to me about the way in which, you know, writers were treated. I mean, you mentioned there that, you know, there was brawls and fights and, you know, I mean, we're talking about the 80s, you know, the police were a whole different breed back then. It's fair to say, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Now everyone knows their rights and, you know, you can't say that to me, you can't do this, blah, blah, blah. But back then it was different. I've had kickings off the police. I've had a good thumping off them.
Really? But you kind of get used to it, right? You have to work within the lines.
Yeah. I would like to say I was lucky or careful, but I didn't have too many run-ins with the police. It was mainly just shit with other writers a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, different arguments and different crews, and you wouldn't be able to go to certain areas. It got a little bit gangy towards the end of the 80s, I think. Do you know what I mean? Brum kind of split into two. So you got, there was a lot of crews under the heading of the Southside Mafia.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was Colt? And he started a Transit Massacre and East Coast. And it did get a bit hairy at times. So there was quite a few run-ins.
Really?
But it was it was probably a lot of it was them times anyway. Do you know what I mean? It was a lot different then.
I mean, you're inventing as you go, right? There's no model to graph. Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? And
it was weird. It's like you kind of had to, you couldn't bite because that was obviously the ultimate sin, but you couldn't stray too far away from the formula either, if that makes sense.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? It was like, you know, 3D with the lines in it and the bubbles and, I don't know, characters with guns. It was always quite samey. It was strange, really. If you went outside of that kind of model, you were kind of frowned upon a little bit back then. It was quite strange. So you couldn't bite, but you couldn't be too original either.
It's almost like, what's original to you may not be. It's like a hierarchy of graph, right?
Yeah,
you can do that.
Really,
but you can't do this.
A bit of the time. It's just looking back at it now. You kind of think about it, and I remember Juice was always very different, and people just didn't get it. They didn't get it at all.
See, I put Juice up there with Part Two and the kind of the characters that we know and love that really push boundaries. I mean, when you talk about art realism, you know, and abstract and, you know, that kind of that era. I can imagine it, you know, to a lot of hardcore graffiti writers, it's like, well, that goes straight to exhibition, doesn't it? You know?
Yeah.
How did you navigate through that era? Because obviously you've brought your own finishing touches, shall we say, that actually it paid dividends at that time to think outside the box and move the creative formula forward a bit, didn't it?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I think I don't know really. I think you just have to do what you have to do. Do you know what I mean? You've got to put some of your personality into it and just always try and push yourself and push for more.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? And I think as I'm getting older now, I'll probably feel that more than ever because, you know, I'm thinking, well, how much longer am I going to be painting walls? Do you know what I mean? I might not be able to paint walls in another 5 or 6 years' time. So I'm trying to savour each one and try and push it as much as I can. Not for anything, just for myself.
Yeah, I get you. I get you. I think everyone holds a level of flame when it comes to that. Sometimes it, and it's certainly in the case of beatboxing and other art forms, you find the influences come from the most weirdest of places. Like, you know, Europe really held accountability to some of the, you know, like Scandinavia and, you know, things that Delta was doing, and then later on with Lumit and Dime, and then, you know, you almost need another source of influence, don't you?
Yeah. I think, yeah, definitely. I mean, obviously, you know, as the internet comes, that changed graffiti massively. Because obviously back in the day, all you'd see is either other people's photos, or you literally would have days and just go looking for new stuff.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Going to these real shitty places and just walking around, hoping to find something. And a lot of the times you'd be walking, especially around Spaghetti Junction, around there. It's such a big area, kind of spread out. There's canals and there's different tunnels and this, that, and the other. So you'd be wandering around and you could smell the paint. You'd be like, I can smell paint. You'd start getting excited because you think you're going to see a new piece. Do you know what I mean? It was really different. Now, obviously, you just go on the internet. But I mean, I guess a big thing for a lot of old school writers is the internet. Some people love it, some people hate it. I think it's just something that's changed, and it's got its good points and it's got its bad points, I guess. But on a whole, I think it's a good thing because you get to see so much more.
100%.
Yeah.
I love the fact that it's an open market, you know.
Yeah, it's good, man.
You said there about smelling it and almost hunting it down. It kind of reminds me of you know, that kind of ghost hunter, you know, trying to find it. We smelt it. Where can we see it? I mean, that in itself, finding plots, finding the new thing, that's part of the charm, right?
Yeah, it was. We'd spend whole weekends just searching out new graph or looking for new spots or whatever, and we'd be, you know, going under bridges, climbing over fences, just going places that probably 99% of the population would never see. Some of these strange tucked away places that you just stumble across and it's like, the fuck? Then you can smell a bit of paint, so you're walking through all kinds of shit to try and get to it. So, yeah, it was part and parcel of it.
Yeah, the kind of thing that people don't readily understand about graph is that there's a code and there's a lifestyle that runs with that code. It's and there's in rules. There's things like, just going back to the, you know, the more, it's keeping up with the formula of the day, right? And to be present in the graph scene, you almost got to understand what those codes are, and moreover, respect it. Like, you could be smelling the paint and going about your business, and all of a sudden you said, but that plot might be some other crew's, and it might, then there's rules to that as well, right?
Yeah. Definitely. There was definitely spots that you wouldn't dare paint there. You just wouldn't dare paint there because the amount of, you know, hassle you get from it just wasn't worth it.
Give me some spots that even now you think, well, that was notorious. Like, that it's not, it may not be around anymore, but for Birmingham of its time, like, what were the most exclusive spots that may not be around anymore?
There was the Very Merry Tunnel, which is what we named it, which was, it's a subway, a closed off subway in the middle of Birmingham. And it's like an access tunnel to, there's like a Queensway that goes under Birmingham.
Okay.
And there's a little pull in to the side of one of the roads. And if you pull in there, there was a subway. And you go through this subway. It's probably about half, maybe not half a mile long, but it was a long subway. And then right the other side, you get some steps up to a door that you can only open from the inside. And it used to come out by the town hall. So what we used to do, we used to walk down the Queensway and walk up, and then somebody would go through and open the door, and we'd let everyone in, and we'd be painting there Saturday afternoons, Saturday nights, any time we want, because nobody could come in. Do you know what I mean?
That is so good.
It was a wicked spot. It was horrible. But it was good.
Loved it.
We'd spend all night in there and have like a little graph party down there. It'd be like 10 of us painting or something. So it was a wicked spot. And there was other tunnels that come off it as well, but they've been bricked up. And somebody had smashed a couple of bricks out. You could shine something in there. And you could see other subways that come off it. We never got into them, but that was a wicked spot. That was. It was right in the middle of town, and nobody knew he was there. But it was said, under spot. Like, if you went to Heathtown or something, where Goldie was from, and all, you wouldn't dare even drop a tag there.
Really?
Mm.
Wow.
You said there was 10 of you there. 10 of you. Like, who else was moving and shaking with you at that time then?
It would have been, so we used to paint with, there'd be myself, Meth, Fuse, Custo. Who else was there? It was Custo. Blah, 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 blah. It was Etch was there. There was quite a few of us. I can't even remember now who else was there.
Get them names in, baby. Get them names in. Give the flowers. The flowers are out now, baby.
There was just a fair few of us, and we'd meet up and just paint in there.
Oh, so we're talking, because, you know, 87 was really when, you know, you went ham, right? Are we talking about that? Are we talking about around that sort of time?
Yeah, probably around that time, about 87 to, probably still about 19, and I think I stopped about 1990, 1991 for a little bit. Well, for about 12 years.
Why is that?
I had children.
That'll do it.
I just felt like basically the main real reason for it was everyone started going to raves and people just stopped painting just overnight.
Were you raving? Did you go out raving? Was that a thing?
No. I fucking hated it because in my mind it killed graft.
So
I wouldn't even
it?
Give it the time of day. Do you know what I mean? It was. Yeah. I just was like, that's just wank. And I didn't like it. And I'd kind of got these responsibilities drop on me.
Yeah.
When I stopped painting, I was absolutely gutted.
Oh, so it wasn't the case that you wanted to stop, so to speak, but you... It wasn't that you wanted to stop, so to speak, but you felt that the trend had kind of reached a peak and everyone was kind of disbanding.
Yeah, I mean, it did. It almost stopped out overnight. The last piece I did before I quit was in Selly Oak, and I went there and painted on my own because there was nobody there, which was unheard of for a weekend.
Wow.
And just everyone just quit and started going to raves and fucking blowing whistles and stuff. And I just hate rave purely because in my mind it killed graph in the 80s.
It really did. You're not the no real talk. You're not the first person to say that, because for a lot of people that, you know, hip hop as a whole, it descended into the UK and it had almost like a religious, you know. We're going to live forever, guys. You know what I mean? This is us.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. I just thought it'd last forever. I never even considered that it would stop. And then it just did, and it felt like it happened overnight. And I was gutted, man. It just seemed to end. And obviously I've got the pressure of having kids young and bills to pay and all that business. So... Mm. I'd say it's more forced on me, pressured onto me to quit than wanting to. And I didn't do anything till about 96.
Mm.
And I had to have an operation. So I was off work for weeks and it was really hot. And I just sat in the garden and just started doodling. And I started doing a few black book pieces.
Mm.
But it was kind of before the internet kicked in properly. So I'd lost touch with everyone. I didn't really know if there was a scene anymore. So I carried on drawing for a bit and then kind of stopped again. And then it's about 2002 or something, 2001. And we got the internet and I started seeing stuff on the internet. And then I started seeing stuff done by people that I used to know. And I'm looking at what they're doing now and it's like, fuck, how are they doing that?
Wow.
And I was amazed all over again. Do you know what I mean?
It's a gift that keeps on giving, isn't it? Especially when you hold your, what's the word? And I think we all go through it. all of a sudden, someone out of nowhere, like a maverick, suddenly charms you, and you've got something there that you're like, well, so people do give a shit.
Yeah, I think the main one that I saw was, well, there was a couple. There was Croyes, who I hadn't seen forever, and I've gone online and seen this stuff he's painting, and it just blew my head away. I was like, how is he doing that? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And another one was Chu, because Chu used to knock about with us for a bit.
Can I just stop you there? Chu, without question, is one hell of an unsung hero in the Brum area. Unquestionable.
Yeah, I mean, he's done some. The stuff that I saw online before I started again the second time round, I just couldn't grasp it. I was just like, how the hell has he even done that?
Mm. The 3D as well, when you put the glasses on and you see the whole thing pop. Wow.
Just insane. He just sees the world through different eyes than everybody else, I think.
An absolute beast of his time.
Mm, I agree.
You mentioned there before about Goldie. Of course, it's well documented. But how ruthless was him and his fraternity at the time? Because, you know, it almost goes down in folklore, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, he was an idol of mine, to be perfectly honest. I used to see his stuff, and I thought it was just the best stuff I'd ever seen. And I started painting with Dez from Warsaw.
Got you, got you.
Rest in peace. He's not with us any longer, unfortunately.
Rest in peace, yep.
But, I was painting with him quite a bit, and he was painting with Goldie a lot of the time. And he introduced us, but it wasn't a good meeting.
So no, listen, it's a curious scenario where you get these figureheads that come through the ashes, and this is the best bit about talking to someone like yourself, because you get all this intel, incredible stories and insights that aren't readily talked about.
Yeah, there's a few things that obviously go on and stuff that aren't common knowledge, I guess.
Crazy, crazy. So coming out of the rave era, where everyone was having a good old party and a whistle blow, and you were there, how much stock did you have in terms of Black Book action?
From when I quit or when I was first painted?
Both. Let's go both. First one, start with that.
Early on, there was quite a bit. I've still got I've got a handful of pieces from the 80s, Black Book pieces, but you just kind of lose them over the years. I've got the ones I did in the 90s. And then this time round, there's a big folder under this seat that I'm sitting on that's just ram-packed with shit from over the years.
Can we get that out? Can we see anything? Because we're zooming right now. We're in your habitat right now. Is there anything we can draw out? Yeah, I want to see. Come on, let's get into it.
There's a few in here.
Serious? that's no moon. That's a space station.
There's a few bits in there. Let's have a look.
Fantastic. So, listen. Tell me that Killer Podcast don't give you the insights right here. Let's get into it.
I'm trying to find some older ones.
This is a trip right here. Here we go.
These are the more recent ones, I think.
Wow. Stop it.
Can you see that, yeah?
Yeah, I see it. Broad as brass. Wow.
That's from a couple of weeks ago, to be fair.
Just a quick question. How long does something like that take you to collect? We're talking Black Books here. How long does that take?
I don't even know, you know, fucking ages. I can't spend like all day on a piece because of, you know, family, work, homes, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So I try and do a few hours here and there. But overall, I think I was on that for a couple of weeks.
Jeez.
And doing bits now and again.
Couple of weeks. Wow. What? is that a... You know what I'm saying?
That's last year, I think that one is.
More. Incredible. See, look, you're getting insights right here. This is the inner workings of Endeavor. The realism. Crazy. My goodness.
Let me find some old ones.
Yeah, let's go deep into the archive here. Come on, Kay. Let's get into it. This is unprecedented, by the way. We did not forecast this happening. He's literally pulling these out of the bag.
This is 2015.
What the fibbins is that? When was that again? Sorry, say that again.
2015, that one.
15, you know, casual 2015, pull out the bag, come on.
That's a recent one as well. They're not in any chronological order, they're just kind of chucked in there.
I don't blame you. Where'd you begin? That is incredible. More. Next. I mean, this is rare. What we're witnessing here is some... This is OG... levels, what we got.
This is older stuff in this one.
Oh, we're going archive.
Oh, my goodness.
You can see the dust coming out of them as we're talking, right?
Come.
In fact, warts and all, you know, because I think for everybody that's watching, it's like, you know, this is some masterful stuff.
I don't even know that one was done.
Wow. Well, no colour, just straight black and white.
No colour. I must admit, I've been trying to push them a lot more the last couple of years. The older ones are smaller and mainly black and white.
Why is that? Is that just to work with letters as opposed to, you know, leaning on the colour?
I think just trying to push them more and more, I guess. Just trying to add more to them.
When was that? When was that one there?
Unfortunately, I haven't dated these ones, but they're probably about 2010, something like that.
What were you doing in 2010, people? What was going on in your lives in 2010? My guy was sitting there studying.
Mate, there's fucking loads in this one.
Really?
This was done some French geezer, I think.
Band. Oh, wow. Yeah. See, and each time you pull something out, it's like there's a different perspective every time.
I'll try and switch it up a little bit.
Yeah. Versatility again. You know, we're looking at, you know, the realism and just in sketch form as well.
Oh, is it colour one that's old? I forgot what's in here, to be honest. A bit of colour on that one.
Nice. You know what's interesting is that the reapplication from sketch to wall, there's still this there's this space where it goes from page to surface, which I think, you know, that blows everybody's minds, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't, at best I'll take a scribble to a wall these days. I don't really take sketches anymore.
Well, because you've got everything you need, right? You've got all your tools in the, you know, in the box, and you kind of work it as you go.
It kind of ruins the day for me if I take a sketch, because I'm trying to match the sketch rather than just feeling it.
Mm.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it does. Are you ever happy with that? Are you ever happy with taking the sketch and the wall and looking back on it and thinking, you know what? It's not. Do you ever
No, I think you would struggle to, or I do. I struggle to recreate a sketch exactly as it is on a wall. It's a whole different thing to drawing on paper and drawing a line that's this long to striking a line that's 6 foot long on a wall. Do you know what I mean?
I
prefer the movement and the energy of doing it impromptu. I mean, it's all kind of the same style. So like you say, you've already got the basics of what you want to do in your head. It's just trying to switch it up a little. And I get quite conscious as well that if you get a certain style, that it can be difficult to make sure that you don't that everyone's not exactly the same. Do you know what I mean?
That's hard, right? Because you're going with what your mind thinks, and never mind the fluidity and how you, you know, because you're faced with it. You're faced with a blank canvas, and to a lot of people, that's like, well, let's go to default, panic, default. You know.
Yeah, go to the tried and tested. I tend to sketch up really, really quick and then paint quite slowly. That's generally how it goes. But I don't know whether I'm slow or paint with Posier because he's so bloody quick.
He's so bloody quick.
Yeah, he's fast. He's so fast.
Furiously
and so
fast.
Precise. It's ridiculous, really. I'm trying to keep up with him and I never do. I'm always behind. He's always slagging me off.
So can I ask you then, how are you, because, you know, to a lot of people, I mean, there's many people that don't sketch, but to the level in which you compete, and I say that, you know, with Posier, how do you ever come away from a wall without a sketch thinking yourself, yeah, I'm happy with that? Are you ever happy?
I think generally I'm happy. I'm normally happy on the day. If I'm happy on the day, normally a couple of weeks later, I don't like it.
Yeah, okay.
If I'm a bit like, I'm not sure, it kind of grows on me.
Mm.
I don't know. There's probably a handful of favourites that I've done over the years that I look at now and I think, oh, yeah, I like that one. I'm happy with that one.
Mm.
But a lot of it, I mean, even just picking this sketch, this old folder up, I forgot what's in there, to be honest. I don't really sit and look through it. I can't
why not?
Remember.
Why don't you, though? Why don't you? Why wouldn't? I mean, I get it because it's almost like past tense, isn't it? Like, oh, well. But there must be, even looking through there now, you must, it must, you know, not never mind the nostalgia. It must hop back and, hey, you know, I really must do that again.
I do like this one. I'll just put it on the top. I thought I quite like that one.
Which one was that?
It's quite a simplish one, just with some red paper.
I mean, it's banging. You not thought about doing exhibitions or anything? Okay, you never?
I've done a few. Yeah. I've done a handful. Probably done maybe four or five or something over the years.
Oh, but... so you've done you've done a good steady run then?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I don't really push it as I should or as some people do. I don't know. I just like drawing. I like painting. And that's enough for me.
Mm, mm.
Do you know what I mean?
I do.
It's nice if somebody... I get people message me now and again saying, oh, would you know, they'll commission a sketch or something, but I don't really like doing commissions either, if I'm being perfectly honest, because it changes it from something I want to do to something that I feel like I've got to.
Mm.
And I feel the pressure of it.
It's not fun, is it? I can imagine.
Yeah, I'd much rather do a drawing and somebody go, oh, I love that, can I buy it? And I'll just go, yes, yeah, Sam. Mm. You know what I mean? I'm not a big lover of commissions.
I did do it
for a while. I painted full time for about 3 or 4 years. And when I first did it, I was loving it. I saw this is the best job I've ever. I only have to do a couple of paintings a week. I can do whatever I want for the rest of the week. But I found that when it comes to weekend to paint for myself, I wasn't enjoying it like I used to.
I feel you. The competition, especially when it comes to, like, you know, doing designs, it's almost like by numbers, isn't it? Especially if you, you know, as well established as you are, it's like, well, actually, not only do I love the things that I do that aren't getting paid, but actually, you should be liking this as well.
Yeah, I guess so. And just some of the shit that people want you to paint. Do you know what I mean? It's like, oh, I don't know. Can you draw a fairy castle with my daughter in it, with the hair coming down, with Spider-Man going up her fucking hair, and a helicopter? And I'm just like, what?
With Winnie the Pooh on the corner as well, just a good measure.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? And just on a football stadium on that little cupboard over there, and I'm just like, oh, do you know what? And just, no, I just don't want to do it.
I think that's the essence that people don't, you know, Joe Public, mops, members of public, they don't, I don't think they understand that, what that does, because it's creative. It's like, it's the same difference as seeing, you know, the Mona Lisa, you know I mean? Can you just put a, you know, can you put a flower in a pocket? It don't work like that.
Yeah, yeah. I don't mean it in a diva kind of way. Like, oh, I'm not doing that. You know, that's beneath me or whatever. It's just, I have no motivation to want to do that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. I do. I know exactly what I mean. Is that the core principles of graph kicking in where it's like, well, I do it for me and that's the end of it?
Maybe. I don't know. I think I just cherish every time I paint now. Now I'm getting older and I don't want to tarnish it with doing shit that I don't want to do.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I only have limited time that I can give to it. It's not like when I was younger and I was out every single day for as long as I wanted to be. I've got responsibilities. I'm cracking on a bit now. Do you know what I mean? And it's, I just cherish what time I have. And in that time, I want to do what I want to do.
Yeah, I feel you. And it kind of resonates with me a lot with beatboxing. And, you know, I mean, I'm always up for bookings, don't get me wrong. But, you know, if a bar mitzvah or something kicks in and they ask me to do certain things, it's like I actually more look forward to the bar afterwards.
Yeah, 100%, mate. 100%.
It's just what we're programmed to do, right? It's a byproduct of, okay, it's nice to get paid for certain things, but at the same time, it's like, You know who coined it perfectly was my brother Torch from Germany, and he was like, you know, I love a good Splash Festival or a Glastonbury, and you know, you're performing to 40,000 people, but at the end of the day, I still go back home and I sketch like I mean it in my bedroom. Like, it, nothing beats that.
Yeah, it's true. It's a good way of putting it. It is a good way of putting it.
That's the hip hop culture right there, isn't it?
I think that's, you know, if you stick with something for a certain amount of time or a good few years, you're obviously doing it because you love doing it. There's no other reason. Do you know what I mean? And that's enough for me, really.
I think you're the go-to, you're the okay sign, brother. I'll be really honest with you. And that's why it's such a pleasure to have you on, because, you know, you were there still working away, studying, in the time, in the down period, and then you come out the other side and it's almost like you just jump back on the train and it, you know what I mean? It's almost like the movement kept on going. And, you know, I think a lot of people lean on that for assurance, you know?
Yeah, I think, like I say, I still love it. I probably love it more now than I did then.
Talk to me about that. Why is that?
It's a bloody good question, actually.
Hey, you're on the Killer Keller podcast, baby. we were gonna get you hooked at one stage or another.
I wanna get good at it. That's what it is. I wanna get better all the time. Do you know what I mean? That's the hook that keeps me. I mean, since I've been painting with Posey as well, I think my whole approach to it has changed as well. So I'm doing stuff, I'm still learning and I'm doing stuff that I haven't done before. So I'll try different things. I'll step back and look at it and go, fucking hell, that looks wicked. Why didn't I do that before? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's that little learning bit and surprising myself sometimes, I guess. But it's always short-lived. As I say, I'll do something and I'll come back. Normally a day's painting is paint all day long. Don't really look at it as such. Take a shitload of pictures, come home, chill out, and then look at the pictures. And then go, oh, that bit's come up. Look at that bit, or I'm not happy with that bit. So it's always self-criticism, I guess, just looking at it, thinking we should have done that bit a bit better. You missed a bit there, da-da-da. So I think that's the key that keeps me back at it. It's just always wanting to be better.
Yeah, and it's a self-study, right? When I say the word mediocrity, when I say the word mediocrity, and that lies within any art form, like when you step outside and actually look around you, and I'm not talking about, you know, I'm not talking about the dons that we've aforementioned. Does it spur you on, or does it make you reflect in a particular way? Because, you know, the bombing culture, the dub culture, the, you know, 2 years and tap out culture of graph, you get these moments of absolute gold where someone just comes with something and disappears into the night. And it's like, dude, like, what happened to that guy? Do you know what I mean? You must have seen that a billion times.
Yeah, definitely. There was a guy that used to paint with us from Birmingham called Fuse. And he was a different kind of geezer.
Mm-hmm.
Very quiet. He was different. It's the best way I can describe him. But he was just so good.
Mm-hmm.
He was just so clean, different, just brilliant. And he was in our crew for a bit, and we was honoured to have him in it. And then he just disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody's seen him or heard of him for probably over 20 years now.
Wow.
We don't know where he is. There's different stories about, oh, he's here or he's there or this has happened or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But literally nobody's really seen him for probably 20 years, and it's just added to the enigma of him. Do you know what I mean? It's just added to the mystery and the, you know, that he was just so good. And there's been a few that have come along and you just think, oh, this kid's got it, man. Look at this geezer, man. How's he doing this? And all of a sudden, nothing.
Isn't that the way?
And people forget so quickly. Mm. You know, when you're painting and you're putting paintings up every week or every couple of weeks or whatever, and you're there, people just think you're going to be there forever. And then when they slip off, you don't even notice a lot of the time because there's so much. Just keep coming. I mean, as for the tagging culture and the dub culture and all that, I've done all that and I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't mind that either. Do you know what I mean? It's all part and parcel. Yeah. I know some people look down on it or people that are into dubs or whatever, like, oh, you know, piecing's no good or whatever. I just love all of it. I love to see a good tag. I like to see a nice dub. It's all part and parcel for me. I like all of it.
Yeah, it's transient, isn't it? And then you hail up some, like Fuse you mentioned there. I will, at this point, my caveat is I know very little about Birmingham. You know, I don't spend even a quarter of the time. I go in there like a tourist and I see everything. And listen, there's some long stayers like yourself, Zuki, and moving forward as well. You know, you got your causes and your sums and your tempo, 33 big up tempo. And, you know,
Tempo's active, man. He does some good stuff, man. He works hard.
Yeah. And Krutz as well. You know, I'm a big fan of Krutz.
Yeah. Yeah. Such a nice guy he is as well.
Honestly, it's salt of the earth. Like, he's been around the spot with Cause, and you know, it was just great to chop it out outside of, you know, we're just talking about stuff. And it's I think that's what separates Birmingham from a lot of the other places, is that it's so grounded. Your guy's history allows for good grounds for incubation and development and having legends that really support and they're a part of the scene.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I'll encourage anybody starting out, because we all started somewhere, do you know what I mean? And you don't know where their road's going to lead to. So some writers might look down and go, ah, oh, shit, you know, whatever. You don't know how much they're going to put into it and where they're going to go with it. Because we was all shit when we started. Do you know what I mean? There's no magic formula. It's just about work.
Yeah, it is.
That's all it is. You're not born with a talent to beatbox or to do graffiti. It's all work.
Yeah,
that's all it is. It's just keep doing it, keep chipping away at the block, and you just don't know where it's going to lead. I didn't think I'd be sat here doing a podcast with you and us. Do you know what I mean? I didn't see that at all.
Didn't see it coming, did we? Yeah, and that's the beauty of graph is what people see on the offset of anyone that's ambitious enough to and taking such huge risks suddenly becomes this, you know, void, for instance. My God, like, dude is absolutely tearing. Look, I'm going to move on a little bit because I want to know, give me some stories, man. Give me some stories. Give me some graph stories. Give me some of them, you know, the high octane moments, some of the most scariest moments in your life where you're like, well, I can't believe I'm telling this story on a podcast.
Well, I suppose most of the stories would probably be old stories from the 80s when I was running around like a fucking lunatic, but...
Go on, let them out. Let them all out. Tell us all. Tell all.
Let's see. There was a good police chase one. That was quite a good one. It was... We was in Birmingham and we was going to go out down the train lines or whatever, and we bumped into another writer who was a tagger at the time that was up. He was fucking everywhere and he tagged Acme.
Okay.
And we got chatting. He says, "What are you up to?" And we says, "Oh, we're going to go down the train lines, so we're doing whatever we want." He says, "Can you paint?" And I says, "Yeah, yeah." And he took a can off me. This is a Saturday afternoon on a main road, just out, you know, a busy road.
Mm-hmm.
And he takes his can off me and just tags on his billboard. Literally, as he tags, a police car pulls up. So we split. I run into this, like, a kid's playground. You know, they got, like, mesh, like a brick wall, and then mesh quite high up with a little square in it. So I've jumped up that. Police, one of the coppers is running into the park, jumped up that. I've got my fingers in it. Got over the top. And there's like an alley at the back of the house. He was start running down this alley and it's a dead end. I'm like, fuck. And I turn around, I see this copper just getting over the wall. So I'm like, shit. So I just jump straight over this fence in someone's garden. And there's an Indian woman hanging and washing up in the garden. I've run straight past her into her house.
Into the house?
To the front door. Yeah, straight through the house. Gone to the front door, opened the door, looked out the door and seen a police car coming down the road. So I've shut the door again quick. I'm like, shit. And then this guy's come out and he's like, what's going on? What's going on? I was like, fuck, think. I said, there's a big gang of lads out there and they pulled a knife on me. They're going to stab me up. I'm really sorry. And he was like, oh, don't worry. Come in. Sat me down in his living room, made me a cup of tea. And I sat chatting to him for about half an hour and he says, do you want to check to see if they've gone? He checked to see if they've gone and off I went. So I literally ran through his house, man, and he ended up making me a cup of tea.
Bless his heart. Wow.
Yeah, man, that was a good one.
So the police had dispersed by that point, that you were safe.
I was in there a good half an hour, three quarters of an hour, having a cup of tea with him and his wife.
That is like the cutest story I've ever heard in my life, bro.
Yeah, they were like an elderly Indian couple and they just sat me there and made me this. I just remember this tea was just so sweet, really sweet tea, and just sitting there just talking shit, really, while the police are wandering around looking for us.
Your anxiety must have been like up to fucking 50.
Yeah, man, it was. It was on me like a dog, man. I just couldn't believe it. And just, I didn't even think. I just ran into this garden. I mean, it's kind of lucky she was hanging the washing out because I guess the house would have been locked otherwise and I'd just been hiding in that garden or something. But that was a good chase.
Hospitable.
Yeah, it's very decent of them.
Yeah. That's very few and far between. You know, there's often a superhero somewhere that just wants to kind of pipe up and single you out, right?
Yeah. That was a good one. What else? It's been a few, man. No, it's been quite a few.
But it's it's very much heart and parcel, right? I mean, if you don't get that, this is to my account, if you don't get that adrenaline, then that kind of beats the objective, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that kind of pinpoints the difference between painting then as to painting now.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? Now it's more chilled. You take your speak or whatever, play some tunes, do you know what I mean? Have a natter with your mates, and it's more of a social thing now, I guess. Whereas back then, you had to worry about other crews, police, just do-gooders grassing you up or whatever, or, you know, crackheads or tramps or whatever in some of the places you go. I've seen a tramp shit up a wall that I was painting. in Hockley, that was. Painting this wall, and this guy comes walking down. I thought, oh, man, he stinks. And he just leant up the wall and just shit. I was like, mate, the fuck?
That ain't a colour I'm used to.
Yeah. Then in some of the places that we go, do you know what I mean? You see all sorts, man.
Well, that doesn't age. I mean, I you know, without question, there's other environments and places where you can paint. But, you know, when you think about Digworth nowadays, to my knowledge, it's pretty chilled considering.
Yeah, it ain't too bad. It ain't too bad there.
I was glad to hear the paint shop had gone, man.
To be fair, I live just outside of Brum, and I don't really paint that much in Brum.
No, I don't doubt that.
Not for any particular reason. I don't know. A lot of it, I suppose, is now I mainly paint with Posey, and he's up in Nottingham, and we travel about a bit. And there's not that many spots in. There is spots in Brum, but a lot of them are a little bit. Do you know what I mean? A bit of a grey area, and I'm not going to ruin my day with any hassle of, oh, you can't paint there or blah, blah, blah. I just want to enjoy the day.
I feel that.
You know what I mean? I don't want anyone nattering in my ear or anything. I just want to chill, man, and go and paint.
Yeah. And often when it gets to those more tourist-esque spots, that's another thing, isn't it? Because while it's tolerated and in a lot of places far beyond legal, you're also susceptible to people just coming up to you, you know, do you do commissions and things like that, right?
Yeah. People just talking or, I don't know. I just like to chill out and enjoy the painting. It's like when we paint some of the events as well. I don't mind them, but if I can pick a wall that's out the way a bit, then I'll always go for that wall, always. Just enjoy the day and not. I do feel a bit, when there's lots of people there, we've painted some events and there's been just hundreds of people there, and I don't particularly like it. I prefer to be at the spotlight a little bit. I think that's what I said to you earlier. I felt a little bit nervous about doing this because, you know, I prefer to be in the background, really.
Yeah, and I'll be honest with you, it's an absolute, you know, it's a gift. You being here and shedding light on your career, your art up till now, bro. You know, the inside workings of a seasoned graph writer's mind, I think that's what a lot of us, you know, are endeared by. You know what I mean? Like, I think the biggest question is why? And I think you've answered a lot of those questions in this episode, man.
I hope so.
For sure. What's the future? What's the future?
No idea. Just take East as it comes, man. That's me anyway. I just tend to take each day as it comes in general. Graph wise, just to do the best I can as long as I can. And then when I get too decrepit to paint walls, just move on to Black Book more, I guess. Do you know what I mean? I'm 54. I'm sure there is a handful of writers older than me, but and there's a few kind of my age, but not many. It's getting less and less. So,
Last of the Mohicans right here. Last of the Mohicans, right? Real talk.
No, I mean, like I said, my plan is just to enjoy it and do the best that I can.
And that's what we want to see.
That's all it is.
That's what we want to see. We want to see you constantly elevating, constantly moving. Endeavour, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on, brother. Honestly, like 10 out of 10.
Thank you very much, man.
My guy. Well, if you ain't inspired by now, then yeah, you need to go and check out another 500 podcasts. That's what I'm saying. Endeavour, thank you so much for joining us, man. What a pleasure.
Thank you for asking me, man. Appreciate it.
Blessings all day. Killer Keller podcast. Atla, he was out of fashion. Birmingham stand up. You know what it is. Sharing is caring. Tell a friend. Tell a friend. Crime don't pay, but neither do they. All right. You stay lucky. Don't talk to anyone. I wouldn't. Peace.